Hi, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Creativity Sucks, a podcast from Creative Review, which looks at trends in the worlds of brands, advertising, and design. I'm Eliza Williams. I'm the editor of Creative Review, and I'll also be your host for this show, which is going to look at diversity in the advertising and design industries. Diversity and inclusion have been hot topics in the industry for several years now, so today we're not going to talk about why the ad and design worlds need to be more diverse, as I feel this has been discussed at length already, but whether we're seeing much change happening in real terms, and if not, why not? To discuss this with me, I have three brilliant guests: Lamia Chaudhry, Head of Social Impact and Client Partner at Lucky Generals; Ravi Amaratunga Hitchcock, co-founder of creative agency Soursop in Amsterdam; and Anushka Kandwala, who is a designer, writer, and educator at Central St. Martin's in London. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Hiya.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for joining me. So to set the scene, before we look at where we are now, I'd like to just start this podcast by looking back a little bit. In 2020, a big movement began in the wake of the Black Lives Matter protests that led to lots of agencies, brands and studios addressing diversity in their teams and also in the communications and advertising and so on that they produced. I just wondered what your memories are of that period and the reactions from companies at that time. Anushka, I'm going to come to you first. What did you see happening then, and what did you think about it?
It was obviously, I think, a time that is embedded in all of our minds. And it started, that particular movement was rooted in these protests about police brutality that was specifically related to the Black community. And I would say in America at that time, and then kind of expanded out across the world and expanded out across all of these different industries into this racial reckoning. And I remember feeling obviously horrified and shocked at what was happening at the beginning, and witnessing all of these protests, and then being quite interested in looking at how that filtered down into other aspects of the industry. I and other people that I know had been invested in these questions about diversity and design and the creative industries before 2020. And so I think it felt a little bit frustrating that this was a new conversation for a lot of people. And I remember feeling like there was this huge wave of visibility towards the work of Black and brown people within the industry, but it was very surface level. For example, like because of my work in terms of decolonizing design, I got invited to lots of different organizations and institutions to give a 1-hour talk about diversity or decolonization within design.
Just explain a little bit about that work and how you would describe what you were doing there, just to set the context.
I think a lot of that work was in relation to an article that I'd written for AIGA's Eye on Design in 2019, which was an exploration of what it might mean to decolonize design. And it was bringing lots of different voices together to explore that. And I think that a lot of people were interested in knowing more about what that could look like within their particular organization or institution. But again, it was a conversation starter for a lot of people. And it was done in quite a surface level way, where organizations would invite someone in to give a talk and get people thinking within their organization. But when you're a freelancer and you go into an organization, you don't know what happens after that conversation. And so I don't really know how that work then became embedded into those organizations or institutions. And I know we're going to talk a little bit later about whether anything has actually changed, but that was a time of a huge amount of hyper visibility on this conversation but not that much surface level work, not that much depth to the work that was actually being done. And so I'm interested to see if that has had that much effect and what everyone thinks about that.
Indeed, definitely. Ravi, as someone running your own agency, and you started that during the pandemic, so sort of around this time, but I'm guessing in previous work guises you'd come across this, but what were your kind of observations, and following from what Anushka says, did you see this bedding in a deeper way anywhere?
No, I mean, I have to share Anushka's feelings from where I'm standing. I mean, I remember it was a weird time, wasn't it? Everyone was in kind of lockdown at that point and kind of viewing all of these horrible images and events from screens. But I remember a lot of black squares being posted, a lot of soliloquies and grand statements from a lot of white colleagues. And then a lot of confusion and guilt about how to deal with this without much education and, plan on how to implement it. So a lot of goodwill in 2020, I feel, started to get misplaced in lots of different areas. And then as things have played out, it almost feels like that was a marketing trend as opposed to a genuine intention, which is really like severely disappointing. Obviously, Black Lives Matter was specific to the African American and Black community as a whole, as opposed to, my experience as a British South Asian. But I felt that I began to be conflated as non-white and kind of suddenly invited to a lot of white friends and colleagues and clients' conversations through not knowing what to do about the situations. I think it was a time of great, it was a reckoning, wasn't it? And I think also people kind of becoming aware of racial injustice, not knowing what to do with that. But unfortunately, I feel it's kind of played out over time as a moment rather than a kickstart into a new era. So I'm sure we'll get into that, but that's my memory looking back.
When you were saying about the kind of conflation, I feel like that's continued over the years, where the kind of idea of diversity, inclusion, and you know, in many ways, kind of rightly, it's expanded into a really broad kind of, it's gone from being specifically maybe about ethnicity and sort of a need for more black and brown designers and advertising people at brands and also at agencies, to being about class and to being about age, and lots of different things have all started to become merged, which I think has maybe also made things more complicated. But I don't want to move too far from our original starting point. Lamia, where were you at this time? Because you weren't at Lucky Generals at this point.
No, so I guess I offer a different perspective, because before I joined Lucky Generals, I was part of a kind of a boutique creative agency that kind of specialized in social impact. But at this point, they had no HR, let alone a DEI strategy. But they got acquired by a big global tech company that were from the States, and they were much further down their DEI journey. They even had it as a bespoke training course that they sold to companies. So literally, it seemed overnight we were these industry leaders, and our small kind of London creative outfit were playing catch up. But luckily, we had like a good, robust model to kind of lean into, because I think the conversations about kind of diversity inclusion in the States was, as I guess I still see it, is far more advanced than it is, I think, in British ad land. But I think, you know, everyone's at different parts of that journey, and it definitely took us time to kind of embed that. I think also for my team as well, I was a senior leader, a person of color. It was a moment of self-reflection. I think at that point, you know, I've been working with brands for over 10 years, you know, on their CSR, social impact, purpose, you know, work. And I've never had a client of color at that point. So as an immigrant, I kind of realized, do I play up to my Scottishness more than my Bengaliness, because it's something that's a heritage that's more familiar and easy for clients? Do I code shift to make others feel more comfortable and at ease? I think it was the first time, you know, we really had that open forum to really address these perspectives. And have these really uncomfortable conversations, definitely with our C-suite as well, which were kind of very, you know, that didn't necessarily have that kind of diversity makeup. I think suddenly there was, you know, a lot more vocabulary and willingness and understanding. But I think, you know, what was clear is that people resonate with brands that positively influence the community, and they have to own their own actions, and diversity plays an integral part in that conversation. But how you go about it, you know, and making sure that it's authentic, I think we saw a lot of good practice and less bad practice during that time.
You felt there was good practice then, that you, that people were doing things well and approaching it well?
I think so. I mean, I think for me, it's kind of bring that DEI conversation to social impact and actually, are you thinking about it in a long-term way? And I think because I was working with a tech company and we were working with brands and actually having, you know, we had kind of these modules and course and measuring learning and behaviors, it kind of, you know, we had the receipts and we had the, we could demonstrate that impact. But I think that is very much in the tech sector and not necessarily something definitely that I've not seen coming into to advertising. I think it's still very much the conversations I have now is, if, you know, people kind of think of me as a D&I specialist, and that's not really my, yeah, my expertise. I can speak to it, but I think the conversation's a lot more broader and a bit more, yeah, a bit more advanced than kind of the conversations we were having back in 2020.
Yeah, to Ravi and Anushka's point, it feels that in the ads and design industries that there was this reckoning, but and this a lot of conversation, but the deeper level change and discussion hasn't really happened. Anushka, you're shaking your head. Can we sort of drill down into why that hasn't happened? Is it because people just wanted to have the surface conversation and it was easy then to slip back into normal modes of being? I do think the desire genuinely felt like it was there at the start of this, but it doesn't seem to have paid off. What do you think's been happening?
I think people realised that they actually had to invest money to make this happen. Like, it wasn't just about lip service. It wasn't just about putting time in. It was about genuine literal economic investment, and people just weren't ready to do that. And I think that's why, to come to a point that I think we were going to come to later on, there's a rise in like Black owned and POC owned design agencies and studios, because we were kind of like, well, if you're not going to invest in us, we're going to invest in ourselves. And in a way, I think that that is really positive, because having the agency to make your own decisions, and I'm sure Ravi could speak to this, is a huge deal for a person of color in an industry that is not just so homogenous, but really has very little diversity in terms of decision makers. And so that's why I think that is a huge plus point to see lots of POC owned studios opening up, because it means that we can invest in ourselves, we can make those decisions, and we can control our own narratives rather than having to pay lip service to a kind of agency or industry idea of what diversity is, and we can start that conversation ourselves.
I think there was a big reason for me wanting to start my own agency or co-found it, and this is pre-Black Lives Matter, but was just because it was so much explaining and educating and arguing for things that felt really obvious. I don't think many people know this, but I actually started off my career in the diversity department of Channel 4. So I had a diversity internship, which allowed me to, you know, then kickstart my career. And from that moment, I wanted to get the hell out of the diversity department to be an actual commissioner, because from the start, if you're in that D&I space, you're not taken seriously. You're kind of like a bit part, you know, a charity type status, back then at least, towards where all the real action was happening. And I think being able to start your own place where you don't have to explain that, and you don't have to have a diversity and inclusion scheme, but rather all of this stuff is implicit, inherent. And, you know, with the people that we employ of color, you know, there's a shared understanding and safe space that you don't have to kind of explain. I think that's probably more the nuanced future that I think we can head towards. In reaction to like kind of why that change didn't happen from 2020, I think it's partly because leadership didn't change and the people making the decisions stayed the same. So you couldn't possibly expect the outcome to be that different. And I think after 4 years almost since George Floyd's passing, I think we just need to say enough is enough now. And I think ask the question, is the concept of DE&I fit for purpose anymore? Has it gone kind of too far? It's 10 years ago plus when I was at C4 and we were banging this drum. And I think I've got this amazing quote, which is awful, from our friend Elon Musk, which says DE&I must DIE. And when you've got people like this making DE&I this kind of woke enemy, in air quotes, how can we bring it back to be a constructive tool? And so those are the kind of things that I'm wondering about and kind of angry about at the moment. But I think taking agency, as Anushka was saying, is one big step to doing that.
Lamia, sorry, I interrupted you earlier.
No, I mean, I guess this is a little bit of a re-rant as well, because I feel like there has been diversity and there's been good representation or networks, definitely, that I was a part of pre-2020. You know, back in 2017, I was part of PR Week's first, I mean, talk about a dated term, BME, PR Pros.
Oh, yeah,
BME. Mentorship. You know, remember that? That, yes. You know, that kind of, just everyone else that's not white, basically. But, you know, for me, I was kind of, you know, midway in my career, I'd spent so much not being in the room with people of color. I kind of felt like I got wheeled out a little bit when there was a diversity brief. And suddenly I was exposed to, actually, there are people in our sector that have been there for 20 years, 10 years, and they're getting the senior leadership role. And I think being visible and having that representation, you know, there was good work that I was part of, those good networks. I just don't think they get the visibility. I don't know if PR Work is still supporting Elizabeth Balanuku's initiative, but I think it needs to be more of a grassroots kind of initiative that needs support. And, you know, the work that they do now is they do kind of judging, they have kind of accreditation for kind of, you know, agencies. I think that's kind of, you know, going towards the right path, but I feel like this stuff has predated 2020. I just don't think it's captured, you know, headlines or the conversation.
It does end up feeling sort of marginalizing in its own way to have these kind of initiatives to bring different types of people into the industry. Are they useful, or how should we do them differently, or should we not do them at all? I don't know. Anushka, what do you think?
Yeah, I was going to come back to Ravi's point of, like, are DEI programs fit for purpose? Because I wrote an article on this for Creative Review. It was investigating exactly that, like, what do we actually mean by diversity? Because it's become this huge catch-all vague term. And the language that we use is really important, like, specificity is revolution. And within that article, me and the interviewees really investigated, like, what diversity means within all of their varied contexts that they were operating in. And words like equity came up, words like decoloniality, words like specifically racial diversity. And I think that one of the points that I wanted to make was that no one really thinks about diversity in terms of intersectionality. We tend to think about it as one person from each group, but we don't think about what someone with intersectional experiences might bring. And when Kimberly Crenshaw coined that term, she was specifically talking within a law context, and she was talking about the experience of Black women and how the law didn't always account for their experiences of racism and sexism, and how that was a very particular experience. And I think that doesn't seem to be this attention to detail and acknowledgement that we don't all experience the world in the same way, but the way in which we experience the world, depending on our myriad of lived experiences and whatever identity groups we might be part of, is still going to be very different. Like, we all come from different forms of British Asian backgrounds, and actually within that we're fairly diverse, but we're all going to experience what it means to be British Asian quite differently because of the intersections of our identities. And so that is what frustrates me about the term diversity, is that it kind of means nothing anymore, I think, in my opinion. But I don't think that people have a good grasp of the language that they want to use in place of that. And so I think language is kind of where we need to start again. And also thinking about what each of us can offer within the creative industry in terms of our practice. So as a designer, for instance, and a writer, is my role in this conversation really getting people to think about the language that they use and the images that they use and how what is being communicated when those things come together? What does that mean from a creative director's perspective or a thought leader's perspective or a PR perspective? Like what is our role in terms of what we can offer to this conversation?
Yes, I mean, that makes me think a bit of also the way that brands are presenting things as well, because there's a complete lack of complexity there often as well. I think that it can feel very surface, and it, you know, in terms of the narratives told or the casting or the way that it can just feel sometimes that it's a bit heavy-footed, or if that's the right way of saying it. But I wondered, I mean, Ravi, are you feeling that people, that what Anushka is saying there about this kind of lack of nuance and lack of wider context and understanding and this kind of slightly minimalized way of thinking about diversity does then lead to bad sort of, well, not necessarily bad work, but kind of shallow work that's trying to do something good, but is pretty lame in the way they've done it?
I mean, yes. I mean, I think you can see that in the work. And I think, look, everything starts from good intention. And I don't think anyone's done anything malicious. But I think there was a survey that was done at the end of either last year or the year before that actually documented the amount of diverse casting in ads had increased, you know, tenfold, but the actual teams who made them hadn't. And I think that's a classic example of advertising industry and the marketing industry putting things on for show, but actually not really doing the work. And the intention for that change is then laid bare for all to see, because it's really not about societal or institutional change. It's about being seen to be doing the right thing, not doing the right thing. And I think that makes sense in a way, doesn't it? Because the brands and the agencies and the commercial entities that we work for, they're not charities, they're not NGOs, they're not governments. They're driven by shareholder value and financial gain. So ultimately, the 2020 moment was driven by, you know, an impact on shareholder value, because if you didn't meet these certain criteria, then, you know, your share price would go down. But as soon as you could get away with that and cut costs, and I'm sure Lamy will have lots of insights in the tech backlash against the DEI hires that were made in 2020. But as soon as you can cut costs and get away with those to return value, then that's what happens, because what's driving this change isn't, you know, a societal thing, it's a financial thing. And so I think that's just a reflection of the creative work. There are, of course, instances of fantastic intersectional creativity. And obviously, lots of people quote, you know, Virgil's Off-White as being a driver for that. But a lot of that is because the people who create it are the audience. And so, of course, it's going to be authentic. And that really feels to be the most logical solution for this, isn't to try and pretend to change institutions that are already kind of biased, but rather create new ones that can create a new path. Yeah, I think there's a reason to why that is. But yeah, there's definitely still a very one-dimensional approach to diversity and advertising work at the moment.
Yeah, I think your point about creating new ones is, as we've been discussing, we have seen that in agencies. I mean, like Soursop too, I guess, of that thing of creating their own thing. But I suppose the problem is the institutions that are big and exist are still so powerful that it feels that unless you see the change there, and even in the world of advertising, because, you know, arguably, so I think there's a shift happening in advertising also, that sort of bigger networks, there's an argument you can make that they're going to struggle as time goes on, and actually younger and more flexible and more nimble agencies have lots of different types of power. But I don't know, Ravi was mentioning the tech world there and this kind of backlash. Is it enough to be optimistic that smaller, newer things are going to change things enough, or do we still need to be pushing for this change within the bigger places? Is it giving up on asking the big networks to properly change?
No, I think it's just, it's a journey. It takes time, doesn't it? And, and I think, it's, what Anushka was saying, with people do things lip service and they have DEI roles that exist for a year or two and they suddenly disappear and fall off the mantle. I think there's more scrutiny about that. I think it's interesting, I left the world of kind of, global tech because, Lucky Generals invested, they understood that they wanted to really grow social impact and they had someone like me to kind of lead that charge. But then they also knew the distinction that, for DEI and workplace matter, that is kind of a people and culture role. So I kind of work with someone else. So we've got someone that's brilliant, Kitty, who kind of leads the charge on kind of our HR policies and making sure the headcount and, we try and reflect, the society that we're trying to kind of advertise to in their business. But my role is kind of trying to looking at taking it through social impact to the outside world. But I think it's really interesting where we're talking about casting and messaging, because I think it all kind of connects back to that authenticity and really knowing and understanding your audience. And I know from I think there was a piece at Campaign Man, but I think Christmas ads from last year, I think there was more Black representation than ever before. But I think there was a lot of work from the research that the Diversity Standards Collective did to make sure that those stories actually tell and resonate from those communities. And the work that we do is we kind of partner up with people like the Diversity Standards Collective. So when there's a creative, even when it comes to research or the creative execution, we're actually speaking to those audiences. We're doing it hand in hand with them rather than, a bunch of creatives in a room doing it in isolation. I think that's the way forth in kind of improving, making sure that, you are representing communities with that lived experience to ensure that messaging is representative and authentic. Because, you're right, you can spot it a mile off when it's done badly. I think it's almost, some of the conversations I'm having now is a lot of, and we might get into this, a lot of brands are almost too scared to kind of go down that path because they're worried about being cancelled or kind of, I think that's definitely a tension that I'm having with some of the conversations I'm having with some brands in that space.
Yeah. Well, I wondered how much that, because it's obviously certainly in the UK and I guess the US, Ravi, I don't know how this is in Holland right now or the Netherlands right now, but in the UK, the political, there's a sort of desire amongst politicians to stoke kind of flames of culture wars and arguments around this. And I wondered if that is making brands sort of say, well, actually, maybe I don't want to get involved in this. I mean, Lamia, are you seeing brands having that nervousness around that they might get called out by?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even just in the UK, even when I was in tech and the ESG, because I think ESG, environment, social governance, is a very hot topic there. It's, and quite politicized, it seems kind of, woke, we had certain products about sustainable investing that we had to not promote in certain areas of the, of the States. I think we all were aware that DEI is being used to score political points, and there's a lot of distracting noise out there that takes away from the real issues. But I think the fear of getting it wrong that often paralyzes brands, it basically leads to inaction and playing it safe with work that often results in very bland, uninspiring creative. So ironically, I think these tokenistic efforts, in the end, they're going to get brands into trouble. Brands need to ditch the fear of getting it wrong and really chase trying to get it right.
Yeah, it does just take that investment, and then the chances of getting cancelled or getting it wrong are so much lower, aren't they, if you do it correctly. Ravi, are you seeing that from brands, that brands are sort of getting more nervous, or are they wanting to actually be more authentic and put more time in?
Depends on the brand, isn't it? I mean, there's almost like a reaction to the great 2020, social justice movement in advertising in terms of purpose marketing. That seems to have retracted back into this uber conservatism that's happening now creatively, where, stay in your lane, make work that's comedic and entertaining, but don't talk about politics or religion or, race. That seems to be happening now, unless it's from very specific brands who have the right to talk about that. But that, I think that really is defined by the brands we work for, because we're just an extension of those brands. So, you know, Ben and Jerry's will have a very clear point of view on what they think about certain things, whereas I'm not sure Asda would. So it really depends on the makeup of the brand. But some have kind of gone and run with it. Others have kind of retracted back, I've found.
And Anushka, what are you seeing amongst, like, as someone who's sort of teaching people coming into the industry, what kind of views around all of this are you seeing amongst the students that you speak to, or your colleagues in the education world? Is this being discussed in a way that you think is good and helpful, or?
I feel like when I teach, I have so much hope because the students are kind of the wisest people in the classroom, in my opinion. I don't know whether it's like a certain knowledge or cultural capital that they have, where they've grown up having these conversations in a very particular kind of way. And there's a confidence in terms of what to speak out about and how to speak out. Much of the university journey for them right now is about thinking about how they might visually communicate their point of view, their experience, their positionality through their work. And so I have much more hope for the future than I do for the present, because I do think that from the people that I've seen in design education, who are studying, I do think that the industry is really headed towards being turned on its head in a way, in a really positive way.
I wanted to ask you a follow-up question on that, Anushka. Like, do you see a lot of your students wanting to go into marketing or advertising?
Yeah, so then that's what I was going to say, is that that can only happen if we give people who are entering the industry the chance to actually embed their values in their work. And that looks like lots of different things. It looks like actually paying people a living wage. It looks like giving people who are coming into industry a seat at the table in terms of airing their views, because I'm not sure that the people that I'm teaching are going to want to enter industry if it stays as it is. And I think that's why we kind of see this siphoning off in a way of a lot of people of color starting up their own thing, because the industry feels so impenetrable, not just in terms of structurally and economically, but also in terms of the culture. Like, the culture is not changing. And I think that that is the main thing that needs to change in order to let new emerging voices in and really embrace everything that we've been talking about. But I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, certainly anecdotally, that exactly what you said there is what I hear from people, that there's a desire to have people from more worlds, more walks of life, more backgrounds, et cetera, into the ad industry. But then when they come in, the culture doesn't actually really accommodate. And this can apply to lots of elements of diversity, you know, around kind of parents or older people and so on as well. That there's a sort of very limited world. But so it feels like the door is open, but then when you get in there, it's not fully open. I mean, what are you seeing, Namia, with Lucky Generals? It's a fairly new to you, but do you feel they're trying to tackle some of that? I mean, they're a smaller agency, of course, as well.
Yeah, we're small. And I think, you know, they talk, you know, they walk the walk. And, you know, in terms of talent pipeline, I think the thing is threefold, isn't it? You've got to think about talent pipeline and thinking about how are you starting to hire from diverse talent pools. You know, got a long-standing relationship with Commercial Break, so they're a brilliant organization that helps working class talent get into our creative industry and expose it to them. We work with Speaker for Schools to give young people a taster of the creative agency, because I think even now it's still quite it's a complicated world that young people just don't even know how to navigate or get their foot in the door. And then secondly, to that point, retention, you know, I think you just need to adopt a culture of inclusion and support. And we have a march, you know, we, as a result of George Floyd's murder, we kind of set up Marching Forward, which is our kind of grassroots initiative, which supports different, the culture of Lucky Generals and people. You know, we have an infantry to support the parents group. We've got a Rainbow Brigade to support, you know, the LGBTQ plus group as well. But I think one of the things we're quite keen to do is not make this kind of seasonal kind of, you know, initiatives. It has to really be something that is, you know, our role as senior leadership is kind of help facilitate it and provide opportunities. But it's also, it's a conversation between kind of, you know, young people. And I think what you're saying, Anushka, about young people are kind of like the future and they really are kind of, you know, the wisest people in the room. I think, you know, if agents are going to adopt and kind of really attract good talent, you're going to have to change your industry practices and you need to listen and you've got to think about how you adopt a workplace that's going to attract that. And also, I mean, if you're going to want, if people do want to launch their own thing, we should support them in doing it, you know?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think Anushka, what you're saying about the students really makes sense, because I feel like there's a kind of level where that confidence, as you were saying, about just being able to talk about these things without feeling maybe this weight of an older generation has grown up with different experiences and guilt and not knowing how to change things and so on. It's whether they want to go into these worlds. I mean, Ravi, what are you seeing that people are wanting to go into the ad and design worlds as much as they maybe did in the past? Or
I feel we're having to convince people to come, to be honest. And like we're saying, we're different. We're not like you think the rest of this is, but I think they're, you know, the bigger questions, of course, as well, around whether people want to be involved in the raw end of capitalism and this kind of thing. And there's system change chat and all of these things that I don't think were necessarily on the table for new entrants, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, suddenly are. And I think that's the kind of existential potential creative crisis that I think the advertising industry might find itself in, is, you know, the best creative talent isn't just attracted by money anymore. And in that case, how are you creating the right environments for them to come in? And you won't see the tail end of that for another 6 or 7 years in terms of output. But that's the kind of long-termism that I think needs to be embraced before we enter kind of perhaps a kind of real barren patch for the marketing and advertising industries. So, yeah, I mean, you can see it happening and you can see that conversation. We're having people saying that they like us, but they don't want to work on specific brands or specific projects because they feel compromised. And they're not really afraid to say that. And they're also happy to, you know, not take the check sometimes. So that's definitely new. And it wasn't something that happened, certainly pre-2020, that's for sure.
Yeah. And then do you feel like you have to sort of flex to that as a company, to kind of what, you know, what you do to attract people or what kind of clients you work with? I mean, is it kind of affecting how you run your business?
Yeah, I think we set up the business to be able to be that flex. And I think we've really tried to curate our clients so they fit that bill. But I know that's a really niche proposition as well. So if you're kind of chasing growth and, you know, huge turnovers, it's very hard to sustain that model. But I think that's why we've kind of got a younger workforce working for us, is because they're kind of attracted to that more nuanced and niche positioning. But yeah, I hadn't really expected having to flex our business so much to the next gen, even in terms of like work weeks and in terms of the type of workplace that we're creating, flexible working, etc. I think there's some people who embrace that change and there's some people who are like, no, we need to go back to the way things were. But things have like changed, just like, you know, people talk a lot about AI and how that's going to change the business. I think this generation are also doing that. And that's around the intersectionality piece that Anushka was saying. I think this generation just implicitly knows it, whereas it's still something we're theoretically debating in boardrooms with our clients. So yeah, I think we're every day's a school day for us.
And it really is at the moment.
Yeah, but you have to invest, and I've always believed that you have to invest in, you know, new talent and new ideas in order to stay relevant. So it's going to be at our peril if we don't address this. It's not going to be at young people's peril, because they'll find the right places to go. And I think that's the discussion we're having. If we don't have that now, then we're all gonna be in a very different kind of industry in 10 years' time.
Yeah, they really hold all the cards.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. I think it's interesting how this conversation does flow from one thing which felt as if it was, it began in 2020, this new wave in this kind of very intentional thing. But actually where we've ended up is that it's almost as if companies don't work this out and don't work out how to be more diverse in the people, but also in the work they're making and in the way they make work and all of this stuff, they may struggle. But let me finish. We sort of coming to the end of the conversation, such a huge topic, but I wanted to just finish in a sort of slightly soundbitey way, I guess, of like, if you could do one thing right now that you think would make a kind of, or if you could ask for one thing right now from businesses or leaders, like what would you ask for that to sort of try and kickstart a kind of a real change and a deeper change and a deeper way of thinking? Lamia, what do you think on that?
I think it's quitting short-term gestures and really, really committing to a long-term vision and sticking to it. You know, is it, you know, embedded across your people, your culture and your work, you know, and is it working towards, you know, a more equitable and inclusive world? Can you substantiate and measure your impact? You know, essentially, do you have your receipts? I think that is a more interesting conversation because I think there's a lot of focus on kind of headcount and kind of the HR kind of, you know, segmentation of diversity, but it's actually thinking about, you know, what does that look like? How is it embedded? Are you actually making impactful change across your business and within, you know, the creative output? I think that's where the conversation needs to go.
Totally. Less tick boxing and maybe less unconscious bias training and all those kind of things that felt so superficial. Anushka, what do you think?
I think maybe two things, if I'm allowed. The first is, what do you mean by diversity? What does that look like to you? And the second thing is, we had a meeting of different people who are doing various different kinds of decolonizing work across UAL a few weeks ago. And we were thinking about what it means to do that work within an institution. And I think a lot of the conclusion that we came to is that it's not about decolonizing the institution. It's about decolonizing in spite of the institution. And I think we can apply the same to industry. Like, we're not trying to decolonize the industry. We're trying to make change in spite of the industry in whatever way we can, because the system is probably not going to change. But as agents within that system, what can we feasibly do to catalyze some kind of change?
Yeah, totally. I think that's really interesting as well, because to those that are resistant of change and these political waves, maybe that feels less threatening or less of a kind of fundamental, you know, there's more of a coming together potential rather than everything has to change. Do you think that, or just...
No, I think I don't really care if you're afraid of the change, because it's like, it's gonna happen whatever you want. And I think that culture of fear and of scarcity is why we have seen like so many people laid off of the tech sector, for instance, who tend to be from marginalized backgrounds. There's this culture of where people just don't feel like they have enough anymore. And that drives this fight for all of these resources. And I think that culture of fear and the scarcity mindset is really what we need to get away from, because I think that that is what is inhibiting this change.
Totally. And then Ravi, over to you to finish.
I think this diversity conversation needs a repositioning or a rebrand, because the way in which it's discussed and the way in which it's kind of compartmentalized from real business is a problem. And actually, this is very, you know, core to the future of, you know, how most businesses operate. So I think kind of trying to reposition that conversation is essential. And that starts, unfortunately, the hardest part, with putting people from intersectional backgrounds at the top of the tree, because that, unfortunately, that's how most organizations operate. And I think at board level, at shareholder level, that's what needs to happen in order for real change to happen quickly. Otherwise, we'll see this long tail effect of change that Anushka and Lamia have been talking about as well over time. So I think, you know, change will be a victim of change is what's going to happen. But hopefully we can rethink how we talk about it and work together.
Totally. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. Thanks to all of you for sharing your thoughts today. I think it's been a really interesting conversation. I really appreciate you talking through this and getting to grips with some of the things. It's complicated, as we've established, and maybe that's actually the good thing, that it has to be complicated and it has to be thought about in that way. But thank you all to anyone listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, please do share it. That's how it reaches more people. And I'd love this to kind of be a conversation starter as much as anything else. We'll also be back in the future with more episodes of Creativity Sucks soon. Thanks to everyone chatting today and everyone listening.